Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And with us tonight is Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan. How about yourself?
Well, let's see now. I'm a little concerned about the fact that there's riots beginning to destabilize France, and they've had to call up the reserves. But now, after about 11 or 12 days, they've decided to put a curfew on at night. I don't know how you can handle something like this so poorly and intentionally. And the grocers felt unrest, Muslim unrest in Thailand, and certainly the one of the ministers over in Somalia was assassinated, and an increase of violence in the Sudan. But we have another problem we're going to be talking about tonight, so I'm going to let you talk about another very real problem that we face today.
Yeah, well, the problems remain, and unfortunately, as you so aptly put it, they seem to be growing. I don't know about you, but sometimes these days seem overwhelming in the degree and breadth and depth of the problems we face. But bird flu is no different, Stan. The bird flu is dramatically increasing its breadth and apparently depth in the countries in Southeast Asia where it sprang up again this time. And we've got more deaths. We have deaths in China, and they are admitting deaths there. They have about 100 people under observation now for pneumonia after losing that 12-year-old girl. And the teacher died as well, and the brother has lived. They all had these heavy pneumonia symptoms. There were reports that they had originally cremated the body of the little girl and that the samples weren't available. But China has had to come a whole lot cleaner lately and have to be a whole lot more transparent, and they've asked the World Health Organization for help now in assessing some of the samples that come from these people, and also are looking very carefully at the 100 they have detained and are watching for symptoms. And they do say in some of their reports that the people have agreed to be detained and observed. We also have some 67 people in Russia who are under observation. These folks seem to have pneumonia, and of course pneumonia is one of the developments of the avian influenza in humans. In Indonesia, we have another death. We have a couple more in Vietnam. We have birds falling from the sky in Ukraine. That was reported today. We have India very concerned. It looks like they have bird flu in pigeons. Haiti, there is undiagnosed disease. I'm telling you, they're checking for bird flu in Saudi Arabia. We know there are dead wild birds all over Iran. This thing seems to be spreading faster than we can keep up with it. And you do know, I think I told you the last time we talked, your listeners, that we do have now H5 in Canada, north of the United States, actually in 24% of the wild birds sampled in British Columbia. And unfortunately, that doesn't bode well if it turns out to be H5N1.
Hold that thought.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti, and Jerry was just saying that up in Canada they have a number of birds infected with the H5 part. Now, remember, there are two parts of the virus. There's one, the H component, and then there's the N component. And so we don't know whether it's an H5N1, but certainly it's the H5 component. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure. Where we have it up in Canada is they had quite a few birds. There were about 907 birds, I believe the number was, sampled up in British Columbia, and found out that some of those samples were taken as far back as August. These birds were banded and released. They were surprised to find that 24% of them tested out at age 5. Now, I have spoken to the folks up there in Canada. The National Microbiology Laboratory is in Winnipeg. And over the weekend, I was finally able to reach spokespeople through their weekend press service. And they did say that they were going to give out some of the final results on these birds this week, somewhere around the middle of this week. And hopefully we're going to find out if the N is indeed N1 or N2 is the next best guess. But they can't be sure right now, largely because the numbers of samples and also because birds tend to be co-infected with other forms of avian influenza simultaneously. Of course, that doesn't bode very well for the recombination reassortment of genes that can lead to those novel strains that can result in things like we saw in 1918. So we're going to find that out. Their attitude at the time was that the birds were well, appeared healthy, therefore it's probably not highly pathogenic avian influenza. We won't know that for sure because the H5N1 originally was asymptomatic in birds. They did not have symptoms. It was at Qinghai Lake this summer that those mutations occurred that made it fatal to birds as well. Now, if they have been here, H5N1, if they have been here in Canada, in also Manitoba and Quebec, where other samples were taken with H5, then you can assume that they're here in the United States, at least the H5 is. So we don't want to jump any guns here, but we do want to say that there is a good possibility, as we have kind of been expecting, that those migrations have occurred across the Bering Strait nearing Canada, or H5s have existed in some form back in the 1980s in Canada, and maybe we've got some multiplications of those forms there, and that they're not highly pathogenic. The 24%...
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Jerry. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti from the Arc Institute, and certainly they help us stay on the air. So pick up the story, Jerry, and tell us, you're saying that certainly up in Alberta and some of the other Canadian provinces, they've identified at least the H5 component of the virus. Sure. We just don't know what the N component of the virus is.
Right. The neuraminidase portion, right, and it's the H5N1, which is the strain that has taken a turn for the worse in Southeast Asia. And, of course, your listeners will remember that the flyways for those migratory birds include crossing over the Bering Strait into Alaska and down into Canada and down into the rest of the United States and, for that matter, down into South America. And we have, for example, on our website, you can link to those flyways and to some of this data so that you can see where these migratory birds are going or have gone already. Now, we have, as I was saying before, we have breakouts of H5N1 and of birds being sick and falling from the sky virtually all over the Asian continent, subcontinent, down in India, for example. It is heading down into Africa where it's kind of that's a place where no one wants to see it go, especially because there are so many places where the virus can mutate and have a greater probability of forming that form that is going to make it possible to go human to human with efficiency. We have an increasing number of humans involved now. We've got countries going on red alert. New Zealand did. New Zealand went on red alert this past week, basically told all of its hospitals to get up, ready to go, to prepare for the worst case scenario. The Middle East is testing. The U.S., here's something you guys can all look for on the website, too. The Department of Defense here in the United States just today announced that they are putting up their bird flu advisory page at the Department of Defense website so that their soldiers, military families, can start checking on where it is and check on the wellness, for wellness for the soldiers and families that are located abroad. So, bottom line, Stan, is that things are definitely coming up in both volume and in frequency all around the world. It is only now a matter of time before we see it here in the United States, at least in wild birds, and if it goes to human-to-human transmission, then it literally is only one jet ride away from the United States, and that may already have happened. There is, World Health Organization is scrambling. They're hoping that it has not gone efficiently in these cases that we see in Indonesia and potentially in India and also in China, where we're very worried about it. If it does and it goes human to human, then all of those scenarios that you've been hearing about from the president on down, scenarios that dictate that there's going to be quarantining and we're going to try to halt its spread, or at least slow down the spread. Most scientists will tell you you cannot halt the spread once it goes human to human. And then folks are going to have to worry about how to take care of themselves at home. Now, if you want to read the president's plan, the U.S. plan, you can find it at the Department of Health and Human Services website and look for the pandemic influenza plan or strategy. It's some 390 some odd pages long. If you just go down in the table of contents, down to the pages that indicate community planning and individual planning, you'll get a pretty good idea of what your community might look like under siege, and this will happen like in thousands of communities simultaneously.
Now, of course, what are they suggesting that people do, or what are they suggesting the communities do?
Well, they're saying that it's not going to be a top-down solution, a la Katrina. You're not going to be, the cavalry is not coming to save you, that it's going to be individual communities and hospitals that are going to be responsible for taking care of their own folks, their own cities, their own towns, and so on. And since most towns, cities, and local doctors aren't up to speed on this yet, it doesn't bode well for individuals. But if you read between the lines, you will read words like voluntary quarantining of folks to their own home, hospitals overwhelmed and unable to care for their people. So we've been talking on the air, I have certainly been talking on the air, and I've talked to you quite a bit about it, Stan, about the need for individuals to take seriously this and other global threats and make some prudent plans, prudent preparations that will prevent panic, because what's going to happen is, unfortunately, when this does hit, if it hits, they claim there's no if anymore, it's a when. When it hits, people have to recognize that it doesn't just go away after a few weeks. It will come through in a minimum of three waves. The first wave may last about 3 to 4 months. And during that time, because it will be so dangerous to be exposed to other people, you will want to quarantine yourself and your family as best you can, because any exposure is going to leave the possibility that you're going to be infected. And if hospitals in your community are overwhelmed within 24 hours to 48 hours after the first good outbreaks, you're literally going to be able to save yourself and your children's lives and so on by staying indoors for the length of the time of that whole wave when it comes through. And if you read books, the book on the Great Influenza, for example, by John Barry, if you read that book, you'll have a much better picture of what life was like. And this was 1918 when we had the last great pandemic. And unfortunately, until we have antivirals and vaccines to counter this, we are at the mercy of this thing. And it's still killing 50% of the people that it's infecting. So we truly are at its mercy, and it's looking even worse than 1918 if it occurs. So the best, most prudent thing people could do is to prepare for the inevitable economic disruptions, agricultural disruptions, food supply disruptions, water. They're talking about electricity, banking going to be in trouble, all industries. When you read the figures, World Health Organization yesterday put out a figure, $800 billion would be the minimal global impact of an avian influenza pandemic in humans. and that would be just a modest case of it, not the worst case scenario. So we're looking at, you know, right now, as you have already aptly pointed out, we're already looking at tremendous disruptions around the world due to multiple factors. France is one example. It's shocking. Australia today was absolutely stunning in that they broke up a huge terrorist ring with all of the explosives. They were planning a massive explosion on the lines, apparently, of the British train explosions, the same chemicals. They've got the bags of chemicals for the explosives and so on. There's a whole lot of insecurity out there. There's a whole lot of madness. And I think the best way we can deal with it as a human race, in addition to trying to find the root cause of all of these problems, but the best way we can deal with it for our family's sake and not feel so very overwhelmed, is at least feel somewhat empowered by your ability to take care of yourself and your loved ones when situations are very difficult. We are dependent, unfortunately, on all of infrastructure and modern technology and oil and so on for everything, including the food we eat. And myself from the ARC Institute, we've always been concerned about global food supply. We've published internationally on global food supply issues, and we always come down to that bottom line here, because that's what we're about, is keeping food in people's mouths and to try to show folks how insecure the global food supply truly is, what a house of cards it is. And now more than ever, we are so concerned about what we see that we ask people to plan to take care of themselves, their families, and their neighborhoods, grow gardens, rent little garden spaces from either neighbors or from community gardens, plots that you can get through your local extension service, for example, or turn your landscaping into vegetables this spring. Plan now to start increasing your ability to take care of yourself if indeed this worst case scenario or one of many occurs. Don't take your food supply for granted. Start getting some food supplies in now. Take care of getting yourself through the first wave, the first couple of months, maybe a couple of 3 months if you could afford to do that, by putting in canned goods, beans, rice, and so on. And then plan on the longer term, because all of these pandemics last for a minimum of 1.5 to 3 years before all of the waves go through. And if you've got 50, that's 50, 50% of the people in the world have either become infected or have been taking care of people who are infected. The entire structure of all of the things that you and I depend upon for food is going to come down.
Well, I think the important thing is people begin making preparations. They begin thinking about it, not as an abstract thought, but there's so much that people can do if they just apply themselves. And certainly you have things that tell people the sort of things that they should be preparing for, don't you?
Oh, yes, definitely.
All right, and Chris, give that website where people can go to get information.
Sure. ARK Institute.com. It's www.ARK Institute.com, or if you don't have a computer, 1-800-255-1912.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I really believe we live in very, very uncertain times. If you read the literature that I get from people who are really on the other side of the philosophical spectrum, they told us really at the beginning of the new millennium that there were going to be terrible, terrible times that lie ahead, and that a strange and mysterious force had been unleashed upon the earth was going to have disastrous consequences. And we really see so much of of the stability that we've always relied upon really became increasing uncertain. And whether we talk about the financial situation we're in, a situation that we'll never be able to meet all of the obligations we have as a nation, and you read what Alan Greenspan says, and he talks about the possibility of serious financial consequences from continuing our current course, which we're doing. And then, of course, we see the unrest throughout the rest of the world. And we see the tornadoes, we see the hurricanes, unparalleled before. When was the last time anybody saw a tsunami that killed 200,000 people? Or an earthquake that killed 775,000, as they have in Pakistan? Or the hurricanes, such as we've seen recently here in the United States? Are these things happening by accident? Well, I think we have to say what's going to happen next. And certainly Jerry is pointing out that if you read the literature put out by the World Health Organization, by the CDC, by government agencies, they say that there is a very real threat that something terrible could happen as far as the bird flu is concerned. So Jerry is making a suggestion that people begin to prepare. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure. What we recommend, and there are some people, there are all kinds of degrees of preparedness here in this country. And we've been talking to people since 1996 about it. I know I've traveled all over this country talking about it. And we have asked people to take care of themselves, again, storing food and taking care of their water supplies, being able to purify their own water and so on their own. But we've asked them specifically to pick up seeds. At this point, we don't care where you get them, as long as they're non-hybrid seeds that they can grow year to year, that you can harvest them from your own fruit and vegetables. These are called heirloom seeds or non-hybrid, non-GMO seeds. The ARC Institute has them. That's ARK Institute. Whole collections of seeds that can feed families of four. We recommend that you get these, that you grow them yourself. You learn how to grow if you haven't gardened before. You learn how to harvest your tomatoes, scrape the seeds out of it, save the seeds for another year. And then we ask you to share them for free with your friends and neighbors and so on. So you build this little network in the community, even if it's only four or five of your neighbors in your neighborhood, and be able to take care of yourselves and others as well with this capability. And if you don't know anything about any of these things, then we recommend certain books. One, for example, is Seed Sowing and Saving. And that is a book that literally teaches you how to sow the seed or put it in the ground or in cups, and how to grow the plants, and then how to save the seeds yourself. We also recommend books on self-reliance or self-sufficiency. Country Wisdom and Know-How is an incredible book. Weighs almost 2 pounds, Stan. It has some 600 some odd different pamphlets or brochures enclosed in this one giant book that tells you how to do things from growing tomatoes to raising goats if you had them, or killing deer and dressing them, or eating rabbit, or, you know, sewing clothes, and how to cook things, how
to make...
Hold that
thought there for just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry is simply pointing out some of the things that you can learn in one of the books he's been talking about. And, you know, there was a time when the American people knew how to be resourceful.
Right.
And they could look after themselves. And certainly when we had the Great Depression in 1929, it was a terrible time for people. But people were still able to rely upon themselves, and they knew how to produce and how to grow food, and nobody, there may have been shortages of food here, but a lot of those shortages of food was because the government was actually buying up food and destroying it, or paying the farmers to simply bury the food, or poisoning the food, and to actually raise the prices of the food, and where people were going hungry didn't really make sense. But at least there were enough people at those times that knew how to be resourceful that the people got through the difficult times. Today, we've become so dependent upon just going down to the store and buying whatever we need, and we honestly think that food really comes off of grocery shelves, not that it's grown and produced, and it goes through a long, tedious process before it gets to us. Should what Jerry talks about come to pass, there would be a total breakdown in the transportation of food, in the infrastructure of society. And if you'd like to read a vision of what this would be, there's an excellent article. It's in Foreign Affairs Magazine, which is a theoretical journal put out by the people who run the world. It's Foreign Affairs Magazine, July-August issue of Foreign Affairs Magazine of this year, an article by Dr. Osterholm. And there were three articles in Foreign Affairs about the threat of bird flu epidemic. And Dr. Osterholm, being a world leader, paints a very, very, well, almost frightening picture of what would happen if the epidemic should come. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure. That's an outstanding representation of what might happen, and everyone should be reading that, Dr. Osterholm's article. And these aren't people who are just out there doing theoretical things. These folks are conservative epidemiologists, microbiologists. You've got science writers there who have written articles. I'm telling you, they are so on the money with respect to what would happen that you have to listen to this. And this isn't even the worst of worst case scenarios. They're even considering just the same death rate as or fatality ratio that they had back in 1918, which was only something like 2.6 to 5%. Today's is killing 50%. To give you an idea of how real this is today, just today in the United States, there was a call for an expert panel to plan a pandemic response. Now, you heard the president last week talk about a $7.1 billion response. Already, this is meeting with all kinds of responses in Congress. Here is an article that just appeared 5 minutes ago. The United States proposed today that a small group of experts be appointed immediately to plan a fast response in case an influenza pandemic erupts, as an international conference on avian and pandemic flu continued in Geneva, and that's where they're meeting right now. Stuart Simonson, Assistant Secretary of U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, proposed that the World Health Organization set up an expert panel, according to Associated Press and so on. He says, we must go beyond generalized planning and well-intentioned expressions of cooperation. Now is the time to speak and act with specificity. I could not say that more clearly myself. We definitely are needing folks. We're hearing all kinds of money being tossed at this problem, and we're hearing all kinds of solutions coming from the top, from great organizations designed supposedly to save everyone's lives. But the reality, Stan, the solution is not going to come from the top down because it is too huge. It's too unwieldy. We aren't organized fast enough. We watched it in Katrina. We watched it in Rita. We watched it in Wilma, Hurricane Wilma. You cannot get food door to door to people in the first day. You can't even get it in the second day. If you're lucky, you can get something to them by the fifth day. In the meantime, people are dying. And so I cannot stress enough the fact that folks have to take seriously the fact that we may, from an individual level up to a community level, be able to work, as you were talking about, to be able to work with the self-reliance that our forefathers worked with, to be more self-reliant inside your home and between your neighbors, among your neighbors, so that we will not suffer the kinds of devastation that we saw in Katrina in New Orleans.
And I really think, of course, that where you saw the people beginning to take over things over in Mississippi, they did a pretty good job there. And, of course, in New Orleans, where the federal government was coming in, you had nothing but chaos. In fact, they were doing everything to block doing what was logical to help the people who were stranded on the roofs there. Oh, we couldn't let boats in. My goodness, it wouldn't be safe. And so they kept the boats out. They kept the rescuers out. They cut off the supplies people were trying to send in. You're going to have to be able to look up for yourself, really. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute. And Jerry is pointing out that certainly if you read the material coming out of our government, out of the World Health Organization, out of these public health organizations, they are certainly calling our attention and focusing our attention on the very real threat. In fact, within the next couple of days, there's going to be an international meeting held by the World Health Organization beginning to plan for what would happen if this terrible, terrible thing should come to pass. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure. Well, we had talked in the past program, Stan, that this thing has already spread on the wings of birds all the way through Europe, and we've got it in many countries in Europe now, at least in wild birds. And so it looks like the thing's going out of control. Now, that's not to say that all of the people in Europe have it. No, right now it is already pandemic, meaning a global epidemic. It's already pandemic in birds, but it is not pandemic in humans yet. However, if we get the first efficient case of human-to-human transmission, we've got it limited already. But if we get the first efficient, then we figure it's only a matter of 2 weeks before it's gone all around the world. Now, you can say, all right, the president has proposed using U.S. military to try to contain this by quarantining whole regions of the United States. I don't think he has thought that through very well. Most biologists, most epidemiologists would agree that he hasn't thought that through very well, because you cannot mechanically contain a virus that will be aerosolized. It will be in the air. It will blow on the wind. It will go between people that way. So the $7.1 billion, a large portion of that was to go to Tamiflu and vaccine, a crash program in vaccine production. But already, just to give you an example in today's press release, you've got let's just take these two representatives, Joe Barton, Republican, Texas. He will not support the president's proposal because it will increase the budget deficit, okay? And then it says, but HHS Secretary Mike Leavitt said Bush views the pandemic threat as an emergency. Then Democrats, in the meantime, said Representative Dingell said the plan is long on directions and short on resources for the non-federal partners in pandemic preparedness. And what he must be referring to there is that in the president's plan is the fact that they're looking at faith-based organizations being the ones to deliver food door-to-door. Now I ask you, take a look wherever you're sitting in this United States, take a look at your community, and ask, okay, what are those faith-based organizations that are going to do that? Is that, the local Christian churches, the local synagogues? Is it Salvation Army?
Hold that thought right there, Jerry. We're going to bring our listeners right back on board with us here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti. And before we go on, Jerry, and we really want to, of course, begin answering the questions or probing into what you were bringing up, but I want you to get your website out. I want you to get your telephone number out right now. So in case people would like to get in touch with you and get the information that you offer, or they might be interested in getting the seeds that you have actually made available, these heritage seeds that are not hybrids at all, but are something that can be planted year after year, and certainly are designed so that they will not have all the genetic defects that are being implanted in our foods today by the mega corporations that don't believe in nature. They want to try to improve on nature. It's almost like they want to play God. Well, how can people get in touch with you and your ministry?
Sure. It's the ARC Institute is the name of the group, ARC, A-R-K, as in a botanical Noah's Ark. The ARC Institute, and it's arcinstitute.com is the website, or 1-800-255-1912.
And they can get a lot of information from you.
Absolutely. And let me tell you what else is there, too, Stan, so that folks know. We have made available on that website, because we truly believe this is a mission here, we've made available free, just for the downloading and printing out, a booklet by a doctor who has written a book for families to take care of their loved ones in the house when they have a quarantine, self-imposed or imposed by the government. It's how to take care of pandemic flu in your own home. Life-saving information, including solutions and so on. So go to the website and scroll down, and you will see a handbook. on Taking Care of Your Family at Home by Dr. Gretchen Woodson. And he is a very well-known physician in the United States. He has a huge practice and teaches at Emory down in Georgia. Go there for that information. You will find information on my own radio programs on Saturdays where I've really been covering this in full detail, the epidemic of bird flu around the world, and interviews with Dr. Henry Nyman, for example, on the latest genetic changes in this beast, and when Dr. Nyman presumes that this is going to go global. And I'll give you a hint. We were talking about it this Saturday, and he believes that it's going to go human to human as a pandemic within the next several months. And there are an awful lot of people, I think even in government, who agree that that is what appears to be happening with this virus. And so, yes, and the seeds. The seeds are so critical because they are the way you can feed yourself and your family for years and years to come. As Dr. Stan was just saying, the seeds that you get in the stores that have been hybridized and genetically modified are designed not to be grown true from year to year, so that you cannot depend on them to give you the tomato that you got last year or the pepper you got last year, because it's designed for you to have to go back and buy seed again. Well, what happens, folks, if our agriculture system breaks down because we have 50% of the world down, 50% of the oil and gas supplies down that provide all the fuel for the agricultural machinery? You cannot create seed out of air. The seed has to come from this year's crops and next year's crops, and they have to crossbreed them. They have to genetically modify them. This is a disaster waiting to happen, always has been. The non-governmental organizations such as RAFI.org, they have known for years that the ability for people to grow food for themselves around the world was being taken out of their hands. I've been on this soapbox for 20 years about this issue, and that's why we have made these collections available to preserve them, put them in as many hands as possible, and ask people to give them away when they multiply them. Don't even come back to us and spend a dime more. Give them away. Make like loaves and fishes, you know. Have a small basket full and break them up and send them out, and they will reproduce themselves, and you'll have more and more and more, and you can literally feed everyone. We have sent our seeds, Stan, and I know you don't know this because I've never shared this with you before, but we have sent our seeds to many countries that do not have food, that don't have the blessings we have. For example, there is a whole colony, an orphanage, of HIV-infected children in Haiti who live in a mountaintop village because they were being killed and sent out of their villages because they were HIV-infected. And these children have our seeds up there. There's a handful of religious people taking care of them up there. And they have the Ark Institute seeds up there, and they sent me pictures this year. It would choke you up to see all of our seeds growing on hilltops in Haiti, feeding these children. And you know what? It's all they have. And that's what they're depending on. And water from puddles. We also sent some Berkey water filters. So they have water from puddles up there, rainwater. They don't have any water from wells. They've been sent out of their communities. Well, I can tell you, if that seed can grow for them and feed them as it is, certainly it can for so many other people. And we've repeated this down in poor communities and community gardens in Mexico and community gardens in Arizona and so on. And we've done this from our excess, and sometimes from our need as well. But what we've done, this is our mission. We have multiplied these seeds. We have sent them out. They are now multiplying themselves, and we only ask folks to do the same thing. And in doing so, we'll know that you've not only taken care of yourselves, but that you're helping to take care of your neighbor and your neighbor's neighbor down the road. Multiply these. Bring these things back. And let's plan for a world that is right now stressed. Even weather. I mean, you mentioned weather before. we might be at a tipping point for the heating of the Earth. There is a Pentagon study going on right now on whether or not these weather extremes are bringing us to a tipping point in climatic change. You can find some of this information on the internet. Look up global warming and look up tipping point and climatic change, and look at the NOAA website and so on, and look for these. Do some homework on this. I think you'll be as stunned as I was to see that they are looking at the possibility that we might be getting very close with the CO2 buildup in our environment, that we may tip to extraordinarily hot temperatures that will cause even more of these mega tornadoes, mega hurricanes, and agricultural losses. I could think of no better thing than for all of us to have the ability to help one another by having our seed, by having our food, by having our filters to be able to take care of our water supply. Please don't believe that somebody is going to take care of you. You should know that by now. If you have a television in your home and you looked at the pictures that were flashing in front of you, I know I am still traumatized by that, watching these people starve and die of thirst. Down here in one state in the United States was worse than any other, and we have 49 states coming to the rescue. Well, what happens when you don't have 49 states and the federal government coming to your rescue? And that was so botched and mishandled, and I guess maybe we have to face the reality, Stan, that sometimes disasters are too big. Look at Pakistan. I could cry every night. I'm sure you could, too, to see the pictures of all of those people. They have nothing. That massive earthquake, they have nothing, and you have to look at that and say, my gosh, look at those relief organizations trying to get through in single jeeps, four-wheel drive, up these horrific roads, trying to reach them before they freeze to death and die in the cold and in the dark and of hunger, and they just can't get supplies there. Well, my gosh, there are probably going to be disasters that we are not going to be able to send help in from the outside, and help is going to come from the inside. And while we're at it, that includes your spirit as well. You have to get a proper mindset and a proper relationship with your God, your higher power, and be able to have the strength and the resolve to help yourself and others. And maybe this is a good time for all of us to be talking about, how do we get more self-reliant? How do we become spiritually strong? How do we begin to put together the skills and the supplies to begin to take care of ourselves and our immediate communities and families, so that if one of these disasters strikes close to home, we really can do better than to sit there with our hands out and crying before the cameras, come save us, come bring us things.
Well, I think it's so important that people really get the lists, and there are lists up there. In fact, do you have any lists on your website of the things that people really should be starting to put away? Because, you know, if there the unthinkable should happen, you would go to the store and there wouldn't be anything there. And I think that I can note when they had the bird flu, and I should not say the bird flu, but the great influenza epidemic here in Santa Cruz, and we still have pictures of the people. Yeah. And they all had face masks. Could you imagine what would happen if everybody wanted face masks and suddenly there weren't any there? And so you would not dare go out without a face mask on to protect yourself from inhaling the virus. And the same thing would be true with having availability of gloves and having a supply of these things on hand, and changes of clothing so that you could change your clothes if you came in contact with other people. You have to start thinking about all of these things, and you have to start thinking about it now. And the old the habits of cleanliness and washing your hands whenever you come in contact with anybody else, all of these things are vitally important in case of an infectious epidemic.
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned that about hand washing, because they figure at least 50% of infections could be prevented by washing hands. And regular soap, you don't have to have antibacterial soap. Regular soap will do the job. It's just that you have to wash your hands long enough, and the old doctor's trick is to sing happy birthday twice through in a normal cadence, and that's about the right time to be washing your hands with soap, making sure you get under your nails and so on, because everything you touch will be contaminated by people who have flu. And the people who survived in 1918 are the ones that didn't go out, and the ones who practiced religious hand cleaning and not bringing their hands to their faces or to their eyes. By the way, you mentioned masks. I already know, because we have prepared ourselves here. I know that they're already on back order at some of the retail firms. They cannot get their supplies in time. The U.S. government is ordering up masks. The world is ordering up masks here at the Ark Institute. We had ordered several cases in-house for, you know, we use masks even for packing seeds because we have such dust problems. Well, we got more in stock. So in case we don't have the capability of getting them again because of this avian influenza thing, we'll have them. We are going to share some of those with as many people as we can, Stan. We are going to make them available. I've asked Kristen to consider putting that up on our website. She's our web person, because we want to make sure that if you cannot get N95, that's N as in Nancy, N95 masks that are the surgical type, not the dust particle masks for painting, for example. They don't fit your face as well. They don't do as good a job. But, for example, the 1860, 1860, or 1870 masks by 3M, I understand, are very good. They go down to 0.3 and 0.1 micron in porosity. We'll filter those things out, which should filter out at least 95% of droplet-carried particles and so on. If you can't get them, get in touch with the Ark Institute, 1-800-255-1912, or arkinstitute.com. We certainly cannot provide them for the world, I'll tell you. We cannot provide them even for a small portion of the United States. But we will do our best to help those who cannot find them locally, who cannot find them in the stores. We will try to help you with at least a minimal supply for your family. So if this thing hits in the next few months before we can upscale production around the world of such things as masks, we're going to try to help out as best we can. I wish we could just talk about happy things. I really do. We certainly need some light talk these days. There's just so much seriousness and misery around. But at this point, I see no way we can bury our heads in the sand. We really do have to look at the reality that this looks like it's happening. So many things are happening simultaneously, but this bird flu looks like the greatest threat to the global population, short of nuclear threat. And to tell you the truth, Stan, this is bigger than nuclear, because nuclear is more localized, and you're downwind of the cloud or you're not. This is something that nature helps along and spreads it from person to person when it does get that capability, and right now it's spreading on birds' wings. This is something that reproduces itself in all living things and then goes on. It's kind of the perfect weapon, if you will.
And, of course, it's been estimated that up to 150 million birds have died throughout the world already. They've either been killed or they've died spontaneously. And, of course, it's just getting into all the bird flocks as they're migrating back and forth, you know, from north to south and east to west. So this has really been an amazing thing to see this spreading. And it is primarily a disease of birds, but does it have the potential? It has the potential to get into human beings. And the question is, will it ever get to the point where it can readily spread between individuals? Or could something else happen that would cause it to spread from individuals? So I think that we have to make preparations. I think it would be foolish not to, because I think that perhaps our leaders know something we don't. Right. Under any circumstances, you read things that the president's been saying, you know, the things that are coming out of our various government agencies. It's almost as if they're preparing us for something big that's about to happen. And my suggestion is, you better start looking after yourself, because I do not believe that the cavalry is coming over the hill. I believe that the people who are going to survive what lies ahead And whether it be the bird flu or these other major cataclysmic events that we're seeing unfolding, other people have made at least some preparations, both physically and, of course, as Jerry said so wisely, spiritually.
Yeah, it's. I don't think we can avoid it. I would certainly love to avoid it. But again, if we can help, the ARK Institute, ARKInstitute.com, or 1-800-255-1912. And there's so much free information there, lists and so on that people can use. We hope they'll avail themselves of it.
One more time with that telephone number.
Yes, 1-800-255-1912.
All right, fine. 1-800-255-1912. And, of course, the website is the ARK Institute, and there's all sorts of material there. You need to have a list. You need to have the checklist. You need to go down it. And about a lot of things that you might never think of, and yet it would be vitally important for you and your family if these things should come to pass. Well, Jerry, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, we've probably said it all. I don't know how else we could encourage people other than to say, think about every single thing that you do every day. Think about the normal things you use up every day, and consider for a few moments an interruption in those supplies for 1 day, then 1 week, then 3 months, including interruptions in your electric supply and so on. And this is what your own government is telling you, and this goes on behind the scenes, and some of it gets out into the press. Dr. Osterholm has certainly talked about it, and he does work for the government as well. And consider what you would have to do in order to protect yourself, not only from the discomfort, but from the life and death situations that might arise. Things, simple things like, can you get more of your own medicines that you require for your diabetes and for your blood pressure? Can you get more food into your home by maybe doing without the $3 and $4 cups of coffee and the stops for sodas on the road and so on in your travels? Can you convert some of that money into some foods and supplies in your home to take care of yourself? And then after you've taken care of the immediate needs for your family for the short term, then plan on the more long-term things. Look and remember that these things usually take between 1 and 3 years to go through around the world. And there's going to be several waves, and when you feel you're safe and you can go out again, you're going to be shocked to find out that there aren't the supplies you need because so many people have been ill, and that you can't go out, perhaps, in your community when you thought you could. So look at the longer term, and that's why we ask you to consider starting a garden this year. Get planning now, because gardens don't get planned in a week. They get planned in a longer period than that. Start getting some potting soil if you have trays to grow your seeds in, or get some starter pellets so that you can put your seeds easily in those. Save up little yogurt containers to put some soil in and grow your seeds out in those. Start them at the right time in your neighborhood, in your geographic location, so that they're ready to go out into the garden. Get yourself some books on how to do this if you don't know how. Start learning now. Makes great reading in the wintertime when things are cold and nasty outside. Start studying and looking ahead to that garden. We recommend it, that big country wisdom book, Country Wisdom and Know-How. My gosh, it's a wealth of information.
We're out of time, Jerry, but thank you so very much, and we'll look forward to having you with us again and keeping us abreast of what's really going on. Good night.
Good night. God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, if you study the Bible, the scriptures, you find out that Joseph had been betrayed, sold into slavery by his brothers, and was taken off to Egypt. And there he had a vision, or I guess the king had actually had a vision, and Joseph interpreted it and told the king that there were going to be 7 good years to prepare. and then there were going to be 7 terrible years of famine. And so the king appointed Joseph to begin preparing for that difficult time that lay ahead. And so they did stock up food. And when the famine hit, and the whole civilized world at that time, or uncivilized world as it were, all the surrounding countries had no food. Egypt had food because they'd been making preparations. And I think it would be very foolish not to begin making preparations. I will tell you, I read a great deal of literature that's put out by the people on the other side. There really is another side. There really are Luciferian organizations, and they will tell you that with the coming of the new millennium, and I'm reading something that was written, I wrote back in 1999, just before the coming of the year 2000. And they pointed out that the Shambhala force, which is a mystical force of evil, would be unleashed upon the earth at that time. And since the year 2000, why, we've seen catastrophe after catastrophe after catastrophe. I believe, of course, behind everything going on, there are powerful spiritual forces, and I believe, of course, God is in command, but he's allowing these things to unfold. He has a plan. The Luciferians have a plan, certainly. The globalists, so many people have plans out there. There really are people who would like to see the vast majority of the world population destroyed. And if you doubt that, you really need to read the writings of Jacques Cousteau in the November 1991 issue of a UNESCO Courier. Would be glad to send you a free copy of that. Pages from the writings of Bertrand Russell, who talks about if we could only have a major black plague sweep through the earth every generation, then there wouldn't be too many people. Or certainly the inscriptions on the Georgia Guidestones. And you can see those at our website at www.radioliberty.com, and you'll see the pictures of the Georgia Guidestone. Point number one is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. What they're talking about is the elimination of well over 90% of the world's population. There are people who have a different worldview. They have a different world vision. If you have not read my Population Control Agenda monograph, you'll find it up on our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's the Population Control Agenda monograph. If you haven't seen our talk on the planned population reduction, you can call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and ask about the planned population reduction program. Certainly, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter on peak oil. It's called Peak Oil 2, and it points out that this whole thing is a scam, but it really isn't going to matter because we're going to have to go through it anyway. It will take many years to be able to develop the oil and natural gas supplies that are needed to maintain an industrialized civilization, and there are people who really would love to see a crisis. Remember our conference we're having on the 19th of November, and if you can come, call us at 1-800-544-8927. This is Dr. Stan, and of course, as far as the program on the 19th of November, we're bringing in a guest from Illinois. Dr. David Aob will be with us, Stevie Kidd will be here, Brad Dacus will be here. It's an all-day program, the 19th of November, a Saturday, and if you are there, if you can come, or you can bring your friends, why, we hope to see you. We have to have our reservations in by the end of this week, so if you're going to come, give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And, well, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Bill Sardi is a health journalist and writer, researcher, actually, and really right on the cutting edge of so much of what's going on, has the advantage of knowing how to read medical literature and certainly be able to crystallize the thoughts that are there. And, of course, what are we going to be talking about tonight, Bill?
Well, we're leading off with a wonderful story, actually a special report from Japan, from the Journal of Pharmaceutical Society of Japan, and actually, a pharmacologist there has broken ranks and spilled the beans on the whole cholesterol fraud that's been going on, of course, for at least three decades in the United States. According to him, he says there's an urgent need to change the direction of current cholesterol-related medication for the prevention of coronary heart disease, cancer, and all-cause mortality. What he's saying there is cholesterol reduction doesn't save anybody's life. Nobody's living longer. Mortality rates aren't changed. We've known this for some time. Another study coming out of Sweden is backing this up. The Swedish researchers, I think it's French researchers, are saying that they did a big study. We call it epidemiology, but people in France, older people, and cholesterol had nothing to do with their mortality rates whatsoever. So exactly what we've been saying. It's actually a fraud. It was probably a method to try to bring down the fertility rates and control the birth rates in North America by having people be phobic over cholesterol because you can't make estrogen or testosterone without cholesterol. So we've been fooled. We've all been fooled. And we, of course, the doctor in Japan, this is Dr. Harumi Okiyama. He's a graduate there of the School of Pharmaceutical Sciences in Nagoya, Japan. And what he's talking about is it would be better for us to start taking omega-3 fish oils or flax oils because there's greater evidence that that would reduce the mortality rates from cardiovascular disease than any cholesterol-lowering drugs. And so this is quite a departure. It's in the major pharmaceutical journal of Japan. We've reproduced it on my website with the abstract so people can examine it for themselves. And, of course, it's a major story coming out of one of the major countries here about this whole thing. And then another researcher in Japan just this month has also reported that when they look at the major causes of death and heart disease in Japan, which would be typical for other countries as well, is that what they find is that the people are low in magnesium. It's a little mineral you can buy for a few cents. And they're pointing out that magnesium has something to do with controlling cholesterol anyway. And if we just take it, we might get out of all of these troubles. So that these two researchers breaking ranks to tell us that the answers are in our hands for a few pennies.
And of course, one of the most fascinating things, if you read the package insert with Crestor, and we'll be glad to send a copy of that to anybody. Crestor, you've probably seen the ads where the man's coming down the long spiral blue staircase, and each stair has a lower number for cholesterol, and he's saying, oh, you've got to take this Crestor. If you read the package insert, they tell you that drug doesn't influence cardiac morbidity or mortality. In other words, either disease or death. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Sardi, who's certainly one of the helps at Radio Liberty on a regular basis. But I just want to point out that the package insert for Crestor, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of this free of charge if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We've simply underlined what the company that produces the product says in page after page. I think there are about three pages there and all sorts of reasons why you should be taking this, but there in very small print it simply says our product, and names the generic name of the product, does not influence cardiac morbidity or cardiac mortality. Now, you know, if you're not used to reading medical terminology, what that means is cardiac disease or death from cardiac injury. So you're going to take this medication and walking down the long spiral blue staircase for a drug that has the potential to decrease your cholesterol down, and it is very effective. It works by poisoning your liver, and of course the liver is ordinarily trying to produce cholesterol to give you the normal levels, but they're going to poison your liver. They're of course going to increase your problem as far as sexual function. It's going to influence many people with very low cholesterol who tend to get dementia. There's a great deal of many studies that show that it's with certain of the statin drugs it increases the incidence of cancer. And yet, the major push by the pharmaceutical industry, with the help of people working within the medical profession, many of whom actually either have stock in this company or are getting stipend from the company and getting paid off to give talks recommending this. I mean, this is a dangerous drug, and I believe we're doing far more harm than good. Don't you, Bill?
If you're not lowering the mortality rate, then you're violating the first rule of medicine, which is first do no harm, because you're putting people only at the risk of a side effect. Now, we do know there are some. They claim they're minimal, but we know they're mortal. And we know the major one, which is rhabdomyolysis, is the degradation of muscle tissue. It gets into your bloodstream, clogs your kidneys, and you're dead. And you're running a greater risk for that than you are to prevent any mortal heart attacks. So if that is a greater risk, then you're violating the first rule of medicine and putting people. And for everyone listening, we've said this before, we're a little redundant at times, but the medical letter, which is, you can go online and read, it's very accomplished letter about the pharmaceutics. And
hold that stuff right there for just a moment, Bill, when we bring other stations back online. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bill Sardi, and Bill is simply quoting from a recent article that appeared in the Japanese literature and another one that from Europe, saying that we shouldn't be giving all the people statin drugs because they're really not doing that much good. In fact, there are questions that they're really doing far more harm than good, and you can go to Bill's website at askbillsardi.com, and we were commenting that you lower the cholesterol by poisoning the liver. And with that, of course, you increase the chance of rhabdomyolysis. And even if you don't get this radical condition, this life-threatening condition, why, most people who take the statin drugs do have sore muscles. And then, of course, you increase the chance of cancer. Has a profound impact on the brain, at least in some people, getting dementia. It lowers the ability of the body to produce sex hormones, and certainly that has a definite impact on fertility, both male and female. And then, of course, what about the CoQ10, Bill? Do you want to mention that? Because, you know, it is known full well that when you take statin drugs, it lowers your CoQ10, and yet most doctors don't know that. Certainly the people who produce the products aren't mentioning that. And aren't there rather dramatic dangers if you do suppress CoQ10 and don't supplement it?
Well, coenzyme Q10 is an antioxidant your body makes. And if you're lowering that, it's the little nutrient that really boosts energy molecules in heart. Now remember, your heart muscle needs energy constantly. So you're lowering the ability of the heart muscle to find energy molecules called adenotriphosphate. So the thought is you're throwing the heart into heart failure. Then what they typically do, because they've given you a statin drug, that'll throw you into a type of heart failure in the sense your heart doesn't have all the energy it should. And then they'll give you a beta blocker, which slows the rate of the heartbeat down. That's another form of heart failure. Then they'll give you a diuretic, which is a water pill to keep the pressure down in your blood pressure, and that lets some of the fluid out. You're going to urinate more often, and then that lowers the pressure. But in so doing, you eliminate your potassium and magnesium, which are called electrolytes, that is, the minerals your heart needs to set up a charge to fire, to pump, to actually set up a heartbeat. It's done by electrical charge in your heart. So you're losing the electrolytes, that is, the minerals that make all that happen, and you could have an abnormal heartbeat from this. And then they often replace potassium, but not magnesium. They forget that one. It's the critical one. And sometimes they give you a potassium sparing diuretic, and then your kidneys fill up with too much potassium and you die. But you're also losing, in these water pills, you're losing the thiamine, vitamin B1. Now, when you lose thiamine, you go into heart failure. It's called beriberi. So I'm just telling you, it's very common for patients with hypertension, heart disease, and so on, to be on a statin drug, a beta blocker, and a diuretic pill, and all three throw your heart into failure. So you really need to avoid the beta blockers. A study just came out and showed they're ineffective. This is about the fourth time that they've done this. The doctors are still prescribing them. No medical board stops this. They do have side effects. If you're taking a beta blocker, you're going to be impotent. You're going to be difficult to think because the beta blocker is slowing down the heart rate, and therefore not enough oxygen gets to the brain and the eyes, so you're going to have troubles there. And so the list goes on and on. These are artificial ways to control blood pressure and so on that are fraught with problems. The real problem with blood pressure is just to get your blood vessels to dilate or widen to control the blood pressure, which if you learn the right antioxidants and things, you'll get that to happen on its own and you won't have this problem. But one of the things that the body does, we're going to get back to this cholesterol point for a minute, is in middle age, the body begins to lose estrogen and testosterone. And the body will make an attempt to keep us young, fertile, and virile so we could still procreate. And in so doing, it makes the liver produce a little more cholesterol, because cholesterol then turns into your testosterone and your estrogen. And so all this is an attempt to keep you young and able to procreate in middle age when you're starting to lose your edge. But for that, it's a natural process. They're trying to tell you that it could cause heart disease. Well, the amount of the cholesterol that they're measuring is what's passing by in the artery. It's not what's clogging the artery. Or as an article in Forbes magazine said about cholesterol pills, the problem with them is we're measuring what's happening in the donut hole, not the donut. And so we don't have any idea what's narrowing. Now, just today I had three different people call me. One of them had a mother who just had a stent put in, that is, it's a little wire mesh thing to prop up your arteries in the four coronary arteries that feed the heart. And another one has some of these same medications we're talking about, is worried. The doctor wants to put him on a statin drug, which he's worried about, and he does have a little problem. And so he was concerned about this. A third one they went in, thought he had heart failure, and then found an artery that didn't have any cholesterol problem, but just seemed it wasn't, so they put a stent in him too. Well, when you don't have a cholesterol problem and you're putting a stent in, what's the doctor not telling you? It isn't cholesterol. It's the fact that the arteries are floppy, and the arteries are floppy because you don't have enough vitamin C in your body. and I want your audience to think of two types of garden hoses. One's that round one that you step on and you really got to kink it pretty hard to get it to collapse. The other one is that new kind of garden hose that's flat, looks like a fire hose, and you actually have to have pressure in it, and then it looks like it's full and round. When we're young, we have nice round garden hoses as our arteries. When we're old, they're flattened out, and the only thing that keeps them open is that our pump, our heart, is pushing something through it. All of our arteries are starting to collapse, and the furthest away from the heart is where the arteries will easily collapse, and that's in our lower legs, and that's why we get blood clots or thrombophlebitis in our lower legs, because the pressure push is the least, the furthest away from our heart. So we have this same problem in the four coronary arteries, because right after the main thrust of the heart, your arteries will collapse momentarily until the next push from the heart muscle. So you're having floppy arteries. Again, arteries are built of collagen, and when you don't have enough collagen building due to lack of vitamin C, you have floppy arteries. This has nothing to do with your cholesterol numbers, and we've said this on the air before. After I finish this whole thing, you're going to call me up and say, "But Bill, does that lower my cholesterol numbers?" Which is meaningless. And so there is no number to look at. You just need to know you need to start supplementing with vitamin C, especially as you get into middle age. You don't know the condition of your arteries, and most likely for most of us, they're starting to become floppy and they're collapsing. And what do the doctors do? They give us something to prevent a blood clot, because as the artery collapses, then there's a blood clot behind it. And that's true. That's helpful, because we don't want clots, and then they go to our brain and our lung, and we die. But we're flirting with the whole idea of letting a clot occur, unless we take vitamin C, to build the collagen so we have strong walls in our arteries. So we frequently see people run into this problem on long airplane flights, and then they complain they're getting blood clots. Again, those are just people that are marginal in vitamin C. We need to be doing what the animals do, make vitamin C all day long. The guinea pigs, as we've said before, have the same predicament as us. They don't make vitamin C. We don't make vitamin C. Most of the other animals do. They fortify the guinea pig diet with an equivalent of 800 milligrams of vitamin C. The United States government says it's worthless to take more than 200 for humans. That's untrue. If you take it two or three or four times a day, you'll keep the blood levels up. It's the number of times a day, get a 500 or 1,000 milligram pill of vitamin C and take it three or four times a day. You'll keep the blood levels up, and that will make a tremendous difference in your risk of hypertension, diabetes, cancer, all of the major diseases, cardiovascular disease. So these are the major killers. So, and in fact, if everybody on the planet, I know everybody would like to just eat food and stay healthy, but our foods don't have enough of these in it. If everybody would just supplement with fish oil and vitamin C, those are two things, unequivocally, when we look at lower mortality rates for all types of diseases. So it's good for us to think, if we just got something simple to do, fish oil and vitamin C, and of course, as we led off the hour here talking about the research is showing that cholesterol has nothing to do with lowering mortality rates and so, you know, they're just trying to break ranks and tell us here, and we've been wasting our time and many, many lives. Of course, we've seen the population control agenda at work here again, because this was originally probably an attempt just to lower our ability to make babies and try to get every... And then our grandparents didn't have fertility clinics and all this, but now there's fertility clinics everywhere because all the girls can't make babies, but... If you're on a low-fat diet, you're certainly not going to do it. They got all the foods down to low-fat foods. You won't make any estrogen. You won't have any babies.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bill Sardi. And if you would like a free copy of that package insert from Crestor, this is actually the one that comes out in the physician's desk reference, give us a call. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. As for the Crestor package insert, well, I sent it to you, and what it tells you is, it's not going to save your life. Somebody has been misleading the doctors, who are misleading the patients. who are actually doing, I believe, far more harm than they are good. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Sarting, a health journalist. We're talking, well, we've been talking about certainly this fascinating article that Bill had just sent me this morning out of Japan by somebody who works in, a physician, works in the pharmaceutical industry, a pharmacist of some sort, who's analyzed the material on the statin drugs and said what Bill has been saying for a long time and what we've reiterated here. We've put together a four-tape set on statin drugs. We carry an excellent little book by Shane Ellison on the statin drugs, pointing out that it increases the incidence of cancer, it leads to dementia, and it really does not significantly influence your longevity. And what they do is they simply lie. They take statistics and they twist them around, and they will take a 1 or 2% difference, you know, in between the group that got the drug and the group that didn't, and suddenly that becomes a 20 to 50% increase in your lifespan. And isn't it amazing, Bill, how they can juggle those statistics and confuse the unsuspecting people?
Well, we do use relative data, and so when they say there's a 30% reduction in the risk of having a heart attack with a statin drug, first thing, it's a relative number. So if the risk is 1, and then the risk goes up to 1.3, that's a 30% difference, but it's only 0.3% in hard numbers, so they usually don't give you the hard number. And that's exactly what the Journal American Medical Association finally did 2 years ago and found out that cholesterol reduction only reduced the mortality rates by 0.4%, which was meaningless in real numbers. So they're using a sleight of hand, and you'll notice that most of modern medicine today is run by the stock market. The idea is to get a blockbuster drug, get it in the news media. The drug companies have figured out ways of getting their control of the news media and getting all this done. And I really believe people in the news media, they have advanced knowledge. They get all these pre-publication issues of the New England Journal of Medicine and so on, and so they can go buy stock and make a fortune on this and then tell all the public how great it is. And, you know, I think the American public is just being herded around like they're a bunch of cattle, whether it's politics, medicine, or whatever, line up for vaccines. And, of course, we just go running the second the news media, and they have their little friendly news anchors and all these people who look so believable and tell us all these things. And we can't believe that they're all part of the same game here. And, you know, if the public just wants to keep acting like sheep, why, I guess that's just the way it is.
Well, of course, we're not going to reach everybody in the country, but we will reach a certain number. And all we do is ask you to check out the facts and find if what you're hearing here is right. Because if we're saying that statin drugs are a fraud, and the media says that statin drugs are the greatest thing in the world, and the doctors are telling you that, and the drug companies are telling you that, well, one group is telling the truth, the other group isn't. And you need to check out the facts. And so that's why we offer free of charge a copy of the package insert for Crestor. And understand that when they say cardiac morbidity, they mean disease from cardiac disease. And when they say mortality, they mean death. And they make it quite open. Our product doesn't influence morbidity or mortality, but we want you to take it. Why? Because we've got a committee that we've hired here, and they're going to tell you that you're going to be so much healthier if you take our drug. We'll be right back with Bill Sarting. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and, you know, Bill, it's so difficult, I think, for the average person out there to think that this could really be going on, that the Centers for Disease Control, of course, some people refer to it as the Center for Disease Cover-Up, but of course, the Centers for Disease, let's call it the CDC, and the NIH and the FDA, and so many of these organizations, which they think, the average individual thinks, are there to protect our health, are really not interested in our health at all. There are certainly good people who work in these organizations, but if they get out of line and they try to tell the American people the truth, they're going to lose their jobs.
Well, so everyone understands the FDA and the CDC and these organizations, certainly, they have all the data. They understand all this. they're not working on your behalf. They're working on behalf of Wall Street. They get pushed by letters from senators and so on. What are you doing for my favorite drug company in my state so you can get this drug approved? And what's happening, for instance, in cancer is this terrible problem right now where, like, ImClone had this drug they had spent billions of dollars of investment money on, and the investors wanted their money back. And, of course, the drug, this was the Martha Stewart fiasco, and it didn't get approved on its first round. But, of course, lo and behold, it did get approved, and for what? As a secondary treatment for patients who failed other drug therapy, and we could give it after and along with other medication. In other words, it won't stand on its own. And for the price of $10,000 a month, or $48,000 usually for a course of this, it's going to add 4 more months to your life. That's it. And that's what the FDA approved. And why is the price so high? Because they've got to get their billions of dollars back. That's why. To these investors. It's all about money. I was reading a Scientific American, and they had a study that they were reporting on with the monoclonal antibodies. What in the world's that? Well, those are things to help boost your immune system. They're kind of exotic. You can take medicinal mushrooms and selenium and zinc and vitamin C and E and boost your immune system. But they do it with these immune factors that they inject in you from outside your body. They're called monoclonal antibodies. And they've been a disappointment since the 1980s. These were things that were on the front page of the Time magazine and all the little shill publications they used to promote these things. So you'll go run down and buy stock in it and all this kind of thing. But it's been terribly disappointing. And one of the article in Scientific American was lamenting at all the stockholders for having put their money into this and how disappointing this was. Not one word of any kind of, commiseration or caring for the cancer patients who've been taking these monoclonal antibodies for 2 decades with no benefit at all. None. In other words, cancer patients are dying off. That's of no concern. It was all the money that was lost. And here it was right in Scientific American. And this is what's driving American medicine today. And, of course, what they did, one of the Sloan Kettering, which is the Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital in New York, is the nation's cancer center. And, for a long time there, the fellow running it was actually came from one of the pharmaceutical companies there. He was running the show in order to protect the turf and make sure that all the pharma companies were protecting their drugs and their sales out of the major cancer hospital in the United States. So that's what it's all about. It's all about the stock market. And once they've got, quote, market share and billions coming in, and let's just keep adding on to the total dollars, and the insurance companies look the other way and go, what are we going to do? We can't fight this. The patients all want it, so they want to live 4 months, so we'll just increase your insurance bill. And then you pay more money and more money and more money for worthless treatment on top of worthless treatment. And so this is the way this is going, and it's all about getting money back in the hands of the investors of these drugs. So the disappointment is that drug companies keep losing a lot of money for people. A lot of drugs never make it through. People put their money into these companies. These things fall flat and then never do get approved. And that's why there's pressure to approve these drugs faster. And supposedly we're keeping Americans from big breakthroughs. It is. They're all failures, most of them.
And, of course, if you doubt what Bill is saying, there's a wonderful book. It's called, I think, The Truth About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marcia Angel, who is formerly editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. And she goes into the background of how the drug companies are manipulating everything. They're spending more money on publicity than they are on research. You hear, oh, my goodness, we can't have any. We shouldn't get our drugs out of Canada because the drug companies need money for research. Most of the research is actually done by the NIH with your tax money. And, of course, the drug companies are really, well, we'll be back in just a moment. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I was just talking about the book by Dr. Marcia Angel, who, of course, had been the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, certainly of all the medical journals in the country, the most prestigious. She had a staff physician at Harvard. I guess she still has. She's no longer with the New England Journal of Medicine, but she came out with a book called The Truth About the Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It, by Dr. Marcia Angel. They have given her such a bad time that she won't answer her emails. She won't do any more radio interviews. But her book is there. It's vitally important. And you understand the scam that is being carried out on the American people by our drug companies. Isn't that an amazing book, Bill?
Well, it certainly is, but we have another book on the market now. And, of course, it's interesting for all of you who want to know what happens in America. There are propaganda books that are produced. And now there's a book called Inside the FDA. I don't have it with me, and I'm not ready to give a review completely of it tonight, but it looks like an expose book because it's published in the wake of the Vioxx scandal where they put this anti-inflammatory drug on the market, and of course quite a few thousand people were calculated to have died prematurely because they met their early demise from taking this anti-inflammatory drug, Vioxx, and other categories of the drugs in the same category. And, of course, the FDA was hiding this data and then claimed they didn't. Eventually, Vioxx taken off the market. Now it's back on the market just with a black box warning. What good is that? And in other words, it means it's your fault for not reading it. This is absolute insanity. And, of course, what they're doing now is they've got a book out. A publisher put a book out, and a lady supposedly went inside the FDA to check all this out. She comes from the financial industry, where she was covering things, good investments to make and so on. So now she gets involved in investigative journalism and gives the FDA a clean bill of health, and most of the book is a book where she pretty much sides with the poor, underpaid FDA employees and all this and that, and nothing is said about the thousands of people who died from not only Vioxx, but other blunders by the FDA. And, you know, if you're working in private industry, you get fired. Here, you just seem to get a promotion. And things that the FDA has done, I mean, it's unconscionable to believe that just simple vitamin B9, folic acid, why haven't we fortified our foods earlier? So many birth defects occurring because we didn't fortify our foods. It's starting to work. We need to do more.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Bill. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were talking about the book by Dr. Marshall Angel, The Truth About the Drug Industries, what you should know about them. And Dr. Angel, who was the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, was the staff appointment, has a staff appointment at Harvard, and we've tried to reach her. She won't answer her emails. They've really attacked and vilified her for daring to tell the truth about the drug companies. Now, if you really want to know what goes on with the Federal Drug Administration and how the Federal Drug Administration is in bed with the drug companies, in this instance, Merck Company, Dr. David Graham's testimony before the Senate last November, and I believe that's reproduced in our April newsletter, but don't hold me to that. But if you go up on our website at RadioLiberty.com, you can actually pull down Dr. David Graham's entire testimony before the United States Senate, and when he tried to point out that people were dying of Vioxx, that his estimate was somewhere between 88,000 and 160,000 Americans were going to have a heart attack or a stroke as a result of this product, and about 30 to 40% of them would die. That was his estimate of what had already taken place. And he points out, as he tries to bring this out of the FDA, they let him know under no uncertain terms he's not to be speaking out like that, and they're there not to protect the people. They're there to serve their clients, who are the drug companies. It's the most incredible testimony. It was mentioned in the media, but the entire text was never there. And we have it up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's Dr. David Graham's testimony. Read it, a very courageous man whose career was destroyed. And what was his crime? he told the American people the truth, that the drug company, Merck, had intentionally put out a drug that they knew was going to have a large number of fatalities.
We certainly see it over and over again. I certainly hope all of you understand you and your loved ones are probably taking medications that have never really been proven to be safe. And the idea that you're asking people, well, is this FDA approved? Or even if you're asking, are vitamins and minerals or herbs FDA approved? It's meaningless. The referees in the baseball game are paid off here. You cannot trust the FDA here with what they're doing. We need a referee. God help us. We need somebody as a traffic cop on the street. But the game is rigged, and it's rigged against us, and it's rigged for Wall Street and making money, and it's not rigged. And it's also probably involved with population control agendas. We're treating you, but we're not treating you with effective medicines.
I think one of the most interesting things, Bill, and you pointed this out to an email with me this last week, of the latest lawsuit that was brought against Merck. Now, the first lawsuit where they had, I think, they had a good case and they had a good jury, and a $256 million judgment was made by the jury against Merck. Now, it'll probably be knocked down to maybe $15 or $20 million. But then we have the second case, and what did they do? They got the most unlikely case that were the really very serious question whether Vioxx had any effect on this gentleman. He'd only been taking it for 2 months, and you had to take it for many months before you started getting the deleterious effects. He had already had all sorts of problems with his heart. It was like a case that was set up to lose from the very beginning. And, there's just no way that they could have brought this case, you know, unless they were specifically trying to lose it.
They brought a case with trivial complaints and then ran it through the headlines. Merck wins one and looks like they're going to prevail, and they're rigging this deal. Who knows what they're doing? They're going out probably somehow encouraging attorneys to take on marginal cases instead of the best ones and get them out there and lose them, so that Merck will look good. And I believe they're manipulating this whole thing here now, because they brought just trivial cases. Most good attorneys would have tossed them out and said, I'm not going to represent you because you don't have enough of a case here. And this looks good for Merck.
In fact, once they've won this case, then they were saying, well, we're going to put this product back on the market. Now, Merck has been exonerated, as if taking a man, you know, this was just, as far as I'm concerned, all the symptoms of a setup, a man who'd taken the product for 2 months with a long history of coronary artery disease, and then he has a heart attack, and then he sues Merck. Now, there's probably no justification. I think any lawyer with a grain of salt never would have taken a case like that, because there's no evidence in this instance where that you could prove any negligence on the part of Merck. So basically, this is the way the game is played. And it was really had very little to do with this case. It had to do with the perception they created on the minds of the American people that this exonerated the Merck company. But you go back and you read Dr. David Graham's testimony before the United States Senate, and you'll know that they knew ahead of time there was going to be a dramatic increase of heart attack, but not in 2 months. This was a case, in my estimation, that was tried to lose. And certainly the plaintiff lost. Merck was victorious. But we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, billions of dollars of lawsuits, billions of dollars of settlements, which I think that Merck should pay. But, of course, Wall Street doesn't like that because it doesn't look good on the bottom line. And you hate to be as crass as this, making these statements, but we're dealing with ruthless people. We're unconcerned about the what happens to the individual, and we see this time and time again with some of the things that are put on the market, with the full support of the Federal Drug Administration, whose effort is not to protect the American people, but, according to Dr. Graham, is to protect the drug companies.
Well, they've still got the same people working in these approval departments at the FDA. Nobody's lost their job. Nobody's apologized. Nobody has done any of these things. I just want the American public that's listening to the program tonight to understand they're using propaganda. They're manipulating the courts. They're putting out propaganda books inside the FDA, which exonerates the FDA. And this is what they're doing. What do you think they did after the John F. Kennedy assassination? What do you saw all those confusing books for years coming out on this thing? And so on and so on and so on. And yet, you know, we think these kind of techniques are used somewhere in Russia or something. They know how to do this. And they just make it look like it's independent. Some independent publisher pushed this book out and this and that. But there are large forces behind these things. The whole issue is you, the public, are being treated like little pawns, like little sheep just being shepherded around, and you're just being manipulated by, of course, the big boob tube box, television, the greatest programming machine going, and in any other way they can dream. And anybody who doesn't believe that you're doing this, you may have your glee out of watching Fox News or whatever you're doing, but we're all being manipulated by somebody's slant on it, whether it's CBS or Fox News or whoever, doesn't matter. And they have big connections to please government, because then government will do favors for them. And so this is how it goes. And one after another, we think they're going to get their hands around somebody in government, and then they never seem to lose their job, and everything goes on just the way it was. So the connection between the news media and FDA and our congressmen and drug companies, just all interwoven, and it's you, the public, are the ones that are paying the price here, because you're just being manipulated and treated just like your little pawns in a game. So you really need to stay away from this misinformation.
Well, you know, there's a man whose name is Edward Bernays, and back in 1928 he wrote a book called Propaganda. And he said this, he started the book saying, the conscious and organized manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the mass is an important element in democratic society, and those who manipulate this mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the real ruling power in our country. Our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas are suggested largely by men we have never heard of. Now, Edward Bernays was then hired by Lucky Strike magazine to convince women that they should smoke. And, you know, when I went through medical school, cancer of the lung was very common in men, but very uncommon in women. But Edward Bernays, harnessing the power of the media at that time, working for Lucky Strike, he was able to convince women to smoke, to the point where today the second most common cancer in women is cancer of the lung, thanks to Edward Bernays. He was actually hired by the United States Public Health Service to convince the American people that water fluoridation is good. And, of course, water fluoridation lowers fertility, and it has a profound impact on the mind. It increases the incidence of cancer, has a profound increase on influence on the endocrine system. It certainly increases fragility of bones. All of these studies are there. And yet they have convinced the doctors, the dentists, and the people of America that water fluoridation is good. And thanks to Edward Bernays, who is an evil little man, who basically knew how to mobilize the media. And he told us back in 1928 what he was doing, and he did it right up until the time that he died. He worked for so many different corporations to convince the American people that something was good when it really wasn't. As he did with smoking, and as he did with water fluoridation, and yet his legacy lives on. And of course, even though he's no longer here, his techniques are used by the people who work for the drug companies and who work for many of our major corporations to get us to take drugs and products that really are unhealthy, which is why the incidence of cancer is increasing, and the incidence of heart disease is increasing, and the incidence of diabetes is increasing, and why actually today in America we have 65 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease, the end of a very successful public health policy, if you wanted, of course, to destroy our so many lives. And this, they've done a great job, and the American people have no idea what's going on. One in six American children has either a behavioral or a neurodevelopmental abnormality, according to the CDC. Is that a great failure or a great success?
Why aren't we looking for the cause of it? We don't even look for the cause. We have cases of autism. We're not even looking for another cause. We could only make all of our efforts to say it isn't the vaccines. So without looking for what the cause is, this makes no sense. It is the vaccine. So, you know, it's obvious. I guess you can pull the wool over anybody's eyes with science. So something I want to make your audience aware of, which is a little bit ironic, I guess, considering what's going on in the United States with medicine. Some of you may have seen a wonderful report circulation right now about Alzheimer's disease, and maybe a red wine molecule called resveratrol will clean the plaque out of your brain. It's not a new report. Actually, there's three other reports showing this. But it is interesting, and the researcher claimed that he's going to make a better molecule that works 20 times better and get a patent on it and make it a drug. So all of you out there, it's okay. Just let your brain waste away until I make the drug and I cash in big time. Don't take any resveratrol red wine pills or drink red wine until I tell you to. And then when I can make billions of dollars, then go ahead. Well, one of the problems with this is what's coming up. Nature magazine had a big feature article saying we went the wrong direction with medicines lately. We started making drugs that were targeted for single genes. In cancer, these drugs are called Iressa and Erbitux and Herceptin and so on. And they said that only 1% of all disease in the world in humans are single gene disorders. The rest are chronic diseases, the major diseases, which involve more than one gene. We're going to have to develop drugs that will address major genes, areas at one time, many genes, switch on or off genes by the hundreds. And so this is what they said, we're going to have to do a giant U-turn now, get away from the targeted magic bullet drugs to these broad drugs. What are they? They're small molecules that can get into the genetic machinery of a cell by passing through the cell wall into the cell nucleus. When they started to identify small molecules, they then said that certain small molecules were under clinical trial, but it turns out that nature makes the best small molecules on the planet. One of them's found in garlic, another one's found in olives, another one's found in grapes, red wine, and so on. They're called polyphenols. And as a class, there are more polyphenols in this small molecule area. It doesn't matter whether they take resveratrol, which is the red wine molecule, or the olive leaf one, which is called oleuropein, and make them drugs or let them be supplements. It doesn't matter. Let's say they're all drugs. Here's their problem. They're headed for a dead-end street because you're talking, these things have such broad action that one of those molecules can cure 20 different diseases. Right now, we live under an idea, it's a false idea, this drug for that disease and that drug for this other disease. We're going to have one pill for 20 diseases. Guess what, folks? American pharmaceutical industry is going to put itself out of business. It doesn't really realize where it's headed. We're down to pills that are either derived from red wine or olives or something like this. Maybe they've rearranged it to get a patent. The patent office says these are such small molecules, you can't rearrange them to get a patent on them. They're too simple. You can't make a significant change that's novel enough to gain a patent. So they're stuck on that part. But worse yet, let's just say they become drugs. Let's say they ban them as food supplements. They're going to be down to one pill for all. You're going to put the American pharmaceutical industry inevitably out of business, because this is the direction we're headed. And isn't it odd? Man-made molecules are not going to be the best, because anything you add to these molecules causes side effects. So the future is going to be these small molecules that we find in garlic, in grapes, olives, these kind of things. It's going to revolutionize American medicine. These things don't just attack one disease. They promote health and therefore attack many, many functions in your body all at one time through an array of genetic mechanisms. So it's just kind of ironic that where they're headed is a dead-end street to put themselves out of business, and now they're troubled. They can't figure out how to get out of this box that they got themselves in because they know their own drugs aren't working. And where it's going to go, I don't know.
Well, Bill, we want to get out your telephone number so people would know how to get in touch with you and your website.
Well, they can just go to the website, askbillsardi.com or knowledgeofhealth.com, and that's a lot of free reports and things there that we try to get to everybody. There are a few e-books and other hardbound books for people that do want to study these things, but we try and give away the information. I don't personally make any profit off of my website. If there's a little bit of money that goes for books that are ordered and so on, it just goes to pay the webmaster and so on. So I out of ethical reasons, don't make any money on that. But my sense of it all is that people are needy, and we need to serve people and get them the information. So I'll find other ways to make a living. If I drive a cab, it'll be adequate.
We'll be back in just a moment here with Bill Sardi and to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Bill, was there any reversal of the process as far as Alzheimer's disease? And what about the resveratrol and Parkinson's disease? Did this have any effect on it?
Yes, it did. And of course, you know, what you want is the body does make these plaques, amyloid plaques in the brain. And what you want is something that erases it after it's formed. You don't want to stop the process because then you're likely to have side effects because it's a natural process. But what you want to do is clean it up, and then that would be able to clean up everything that was there previously as well. But this study has been duplicated 4 or 5 times already. This researcher here just ended up getting front page headlines again on an old story because it's been duplicated a number of times. But when we originally had the story come out on resveratrol at the end of 2003, this was Harvard, David Sinclair at Harvard, and it was more promoted as an anti-aging pill for the red wine molecule resveratrol. And shortly thereafter, studies came out and they hit the news wire that red wine pills are worthless, resveratrol is not biologically available. Well, it turned out that a large pharmaceutical company was behind those headlines. They got the study published and funded it. It was Amgen, because they have a secret project underway to try and remake some of these molecules into patentable molecules, and they didn't want the American public to find out and start taking red wine resveratrol pills and find out they really worked. So they put twice in the headlines in that year to keep people away from doing it. Now we have another positive headline about Alzheimer's, and I'm expecting them to counter with something to say it doesn't work again, they're worthless, and again steer the public just like little sheep away from resveratrol because it is just a nemesis to them. Because if the public really finds out about this and they find out how powerful this is, you won't be needing most of the medications that most Americans take. You'd take one, just like the French drink their red wine and seem to live longer and have a lot fewer diseases. You'll just take this pill without the alcohol or the calories, and you'll seem to get well. And that's the concept behind this. They're just trying to cash in on it, but it doesn't matter whether they make it a drug or they don't. It doesn't matter whether they're successful. They are headed to a dead-end street because most of the drugs they have, they'll be down to selling one pill. There's a little ad on television, and I forget the cereal. You go into a grocery store, and there's cereal boxes in the meat department and the fruit and vegetable department and on the
show. Hold that thought here for just a minute as we bring other stations on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill is just saying that we're heading towards one pill, and he was talking about this advertisement that you see on television, and of course, all the shelves are filled with the same product. Go ahead.
Yeah, and of course, that's what we're going to have now. You walk into a pharmacy and you say, well, I need this diabetic pill. Oh, yeah, and we got it right here. And then, of course, you need this one for blood pressure. Oh, yeah, and it's the same one every time. You see, it doesn't matter. That's what nature has. Nature thinks about making us healthy. It doesn't think about a particular disease. And so we find that there are some molecules in nature. They're called polyphenols. They're from grapes. They're from olives. They're from berries. They're from cherries. We're talking about from cranberries, pomegranates, these kind of things. a lot of them in their Mediterranean diet. Some of them are in the Asian diet. And green tea is another one. All of these, and they're small molecules, they're able to get into the genetic machinery, and they work better than anything that man can patent or re-manipulate and design in a pharmaceutical lab. So,
Bill, I'm afraid we're out of time, but maybe we can get you back again not too distant future and cover more of this, because I think it's fascinating. Have some of the people with Alzheimer's disease actually improved after getting on the medication?
We don't know yet. I do know that people taking resveratrol red wine pills, some of them say they're mentally more alert and they have better memory, but we haven't seen a trial or anyone on Alzheimer's as yet.
All right, well, that's something to look forward to anyway. God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us tonight.
You bet.
Good night. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, certainly that was Bill Sardi, certainly one of my favorite guests, and a man who does help us here at Radio Liberty to continue bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Ladies and gentlemen, we are involved in a spiritual battle. There really are evil and wicked people out there who are putting out medications that are harmful to the population, that are giving vaccines, that are responsible for the marked increase of autism. We have public health officials who pushed a public health policy that's led to 65 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. Do you really think that happened by accident? 500,000 people in America are dead of AIDS? Totally unnecessary. We knew how to stop the epidemic. We weren't allowed to. Another million are infected, and most of them will die in the not-too-distant future. We have powerful forces aligned against us, and if you doubt that there are those who would like to eliminate most of the world's population, you go to my website at www.radioliberty.com. You look at the picture of the Georgia Guidestones and see what's written on those four great guidestones about limiting the world population. You pull down my population control agenda. And then if you'd like to read the writings of Jacques Cousteau or Bertrand Russell, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I want to remind you about the all-day seminar we're having here on the 19th of November, bringing in some great outside speakers, and hope you can come. But if you can make it, it's here in the Monterey Bay area. Why, of course, give us a call, because we have to know how many people are coming, and we have to have your reservations in this week. It's the 19th of November, a week from Saturday. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And so, until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.